हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 18, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Visit to Sri Vrindavan, page 54. Verse 218, 195 to 200. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "The happiness of liberation, whereby one merges into the Lord's existence, cannot even be compared to a fragment of the transcendental bliss obtained by service under the Lord's lotus feet. In the Quran, there are descriptions of fruitive activity, speculative knowledge, mystic power, and union with the Supreme. But ultimately, all this is refuted, and the Lord's personal feature established, along with his devotional service. The scholars of the Quran are not very advanced in knowledge. Although there are many methods prescribed, they do not know that the ultimate conclusion should be considered the most powerful." Right, it's just like, it's seen as, there's so many options, so that's how they'll be seeing it. It's just, it's one of many. Even though the whole thing and how it's been put together, it'll show that all this has been established, but then beyond that, there's a higher principle. But this, he's saying the scholars, then they're not seeing that. They're just seeing as, oh, these are various options. You know, it's just like in India. They have, oh, you have, you know, you have karma, you have jnana, you have bhakti, you have yoga. It's just like going into a shop and you know, you get this or that. Or, you know, it's just whatever's your taste. It's not like one has superior to the other or anything. So that's, you know, that's a pretty common misunderstanding. Yes, always the same. Because the thing is, if you have parampara, then you're not working under the modes. And if you don't have parampara, it'll be the modes. So the modes are always going to dictate in the same way. You know, the same options are there, and then it's just a matter of who wants to take which options. And then, you know, because there is variety, then you have the aspects where then you can start to mix and match, you know, like that. And in here, it's not a logical formulation, so therefore, which is it? Which is one of, you have combinations and permutations. Which one removes the doubles?
Combination.
Combination removes the doubles. Yeah, so they don't necessarily remove the doubles. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? When you're mathematically combining, mm-hmm. they'll be the same thing but reversed. Yes. So then if you're looking at it, you would remove those. But in here, they don't. It's the same thing, just it's backwards, and this one is more important or that one, and then it looks like it's a new philosophy or new religion or anything like that. So the modes present these, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains. There's basically 26 different kind of positions, you know, and those can be combined together and all that kind of stuff like that. Does that make sense? You know, major is not so many. You know, major, of course, is just karma and jnana. But then after that you have, is it monotheistic, is it, you know, how you say, polytheistic, is it atheistic, you know, so like that, is it, you know, how you say, is it, you know, connected with nature, like that, is it optimistic, is it pessimistic, like that. So you have all these different ways that you can combine together and get. So all the different world religions and philosophies, they fit into that those categories. It's just a matter of what. And then someone will come along and add some new little twist to it. But, you know, it's still the same thing. I say. No? Yeah. Okay. Although there are many methods prescribed, they do not know that the ultimate conclusion should be considered the most powerful. Seeing your own Quran and deliberating over what is written there, what is your conclusion, right? Because he's talking to someone who he's kind of seen as a, you know, a like a saintly person and scholar, like that. He's just wearing, I guess, a nair line, and you wear all black, then that means you're more serious and stuff like that. You're not so materially inclined, like that. So, the saintly Muslim replied, "All that you have said is true. This has certainly been written in the Quran. But our scholars can neither understand nor accept it." Right? So the Quran is having these things, but the scholars themselves don't understand it, and they can't accept, because they'll have an idea of how they're going to enjoy. You know, it's just like over the years, you know, you go to heaven, the benefits get more and more. Well, before it used to be much more simple, and now it's, you know, unless it's there's more benefits, then no one's really interested. Mm-hmm. Like that.
In reference to scholars, Islamic scholars or academic scholars who study Islam?
I would say both. Because, meaning that the personal feature along with his devotional service, that's what's not being understood, that's what's not being... It means if you discuss it in a general conversation, there's not going to be a problem with it. But to say that that's the conclusion and not something else, it's not about karma, going to heaven, it's not about getting liberated from material existence, that it's not about those things, it's about the personal feature of the Lord with devotion, that's then where some difficulty might come up. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like in any generally someone from the Abrahamic background, you talk about God and the person and developing love, and they're quite fine. But if you get into that he's a person, he looks like this, that, and they'll say, no, he has no form. So immediately they pull back. So that's what Lord Chaitanya is mentioning. No, the final conclusion, that should be taken as the most serious one. You know, it's just like if I say do this, and I say, no, better you do that, it's not like now there's two options. The final one is considered the best. Does that make sense? It's a standard logic. I think Jiva Goswami gives that in the grammar. You know, like that, is that you have four different ways of bringing out, and so that you know that this is the correct one. Otherwise, people speculate. So unless they accept that, you know, which means shabda, then they're going to speculate. And since much of the time scholarship is about the taste of speculating, the possibilities, then the difficulty comes down is that they won't understand and they won't accept it.
I think the aim, the objective of scholars actually never to come to the conclusion.
Yes. I've said before that they have a disease called conclusiophobia. It's a mental disease. You know, like that.
No, because otherwise you just shut down the university.
There's nothing more to talk about. I mean, how many ways do you have to look at a tsetse fly? You know, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, at some point you gotta, you know, move on. So that's the difficulty, is that they're afraid of siddhanta. You can't make, so that's why it's very strange when devotees talk about getting academic degrees, and because they have a degree, now they'll be an authority, that now they can preach in the academic circles. And absolutely not. It's against the etiquette and the rules to give a conclusion. You, as a practitioner, can preach to them as an individual, as a person. That you can do, but that you don't have to have a degree for. It's an illusion to think, oh, unless I'm a PhD, I can't talk to a patient. No, you're a sadhu. Just like he's a PhD, does that mean then the plumber has to be a PhD to come in and say, hey, your pipe is blocked up and we got to do this? No, it's that whatever your area is and your expertise. So they have their degrees in an academic area. Ours is in philosophy and religion. They may study it. It's just like, let us say, so someone could say, which they would like to say, that no, because they're the PhD, they are objective about it, and they know more, and actually they're more qualified. Now, let us look at it. Okay, let us say someone's done, he's gone to school and done his law degree. Okay, so now he's qualified, he can practice law. Now let's say another person has gotten a PhD in law. He can't practice law. He may be an authority on talking about this case and that case, and he can say things in class, but he can't practice law. So that's the one point that they try to avoid talking about, because they always want to point out that they're the experts. You know, like I think I was talking with one academic about that. Okay, let's say we have the Dalai Lama, and we have a PhD in Tibetan Buddhism. You know, specifically the line of the Dalai Lama in the university. Who's the authority? If someone comes in and says this is the way Tibetan Buddhism is, who's the authority?
The PhD.
You know, so how that works, I have no idea. But that's, like you said, they don't want a conclusion. So that the whole modern academy is based on no conclusion. While Vedic logic means, what's the conclusion? Siddhanta is the goal of logic. But for them, it's just the taste of discussion.
I remember once the Krishna Maharaj had one of his papers. He was at SMU, and it was on the Ramayana.
Okay.
So he got really fired up. And I mean, he wrote a huge paper on the Ramayana, establishing Lord Ram, you know, as a new alive.
Right, right.
And he got the worst mark.
Yes.
The teacher said, you are meant to explain what you have understood. We don't need your opinion.
Yeah. But the unfortunate thing is that mark in the red is that teacher's opinion. Because why wouldn't you? Because it is the opinion. Because they'll say, well, what's your opinion? You know, when they have their discussion, it's like, you know, yes, that's very nice, but I would opine that it's this. That's just cheating.
So you got really upset.
Yeah.
Back to the temple, rewrote the whole thing, you got top line.
Yeah. The whole point is you leave it off, you just bring out things and bring out something to think about. It's just, you have to titillate the intellectual interest. And then they'll say, it's great. So that's it. It's just a matter of, you know, that's all. You know, it's like, what do you call it? You know, it'd be like you bring, you know, you bring a few snacks and, you know, the taste. It's that. You don't bring a meal. You know, they don't want a meal. They don't want to get full. They just want to, you know, just this much. Oh, that's nice. And, oh, what else you got? That's it. So that's the difficulty. So it's a fallacy that by having an academic degree, you have a better chance of preaching in these academic and intellectual and social and political circles. Not at all. Like that, it gives you zero advantage. Like that. Means the knowledge you gain from it. They're thinking, actually, the PhD will help me. No, maybe if you have it after your name, then they'll want to listen to you. But you can't talk as an academic. Like that. Because they don't want to hear. You can talk to them as individuals. So we see before, when devotees went on campus, just as devotees talked as devotees, so many students, so many teachers became interested. But I can guarantee you that going down there as the academic, talking as an academic, they have made zero progress. And I'm being, you know, generous here. So that's the whole thing. What one has to understand is that this philosophy, excuse me, cannot be understood by logic or the senses. That's the first thing. And that's the whole thing is, no, through my senses and through logic, I can understand anything. That's the premise. You know? And you find a new area that no one's worked on, and then, yeah, you just go on. Because you wouldn't want to have more people coming in and overturning everybody else's. So you have to make your own thing, your own way. And then you're the authority in your own area, and no one else is. You know, he has his opinions about tsetse flies, but he's talking about, you know, the ones that are on the eastern side of the Congo. While my is on the western side of the Congo. You know, and nobody wants to listen to the upstart where he's talking about the tsetse flies down in the southern part, you know.
You know, it's interesting because when you had the library party,
right?
I mean, they covered hundreds of universities with standing orders of all of Prabhupada's books.
Yes.
So they put these books at the library, And these books are meant to be used to present an argument, not a conclusion.
Yes. Yeah, what to do? Like that. So that's all. You can just, that's all. They just want you to present 500 quotes to show that you've done some work. That's all. So that's the thing. You got 500 there, you've done your work. If you just give everything from Prabhupada's books, then it's not academic. You know, so that's the thing. They have their method, and they protect their method. Like that. That's the way it is. So yes. So it's being pointed out here that this saintly person that he's saying is that yes, the scholars won't understand this. And even if you did kind of explain it to them so they could technically understand it, they wouldn't want to accept it. Because then their position as a scholar is lost. Because then the point is the conclusion you have to apply. Is we have to remember only if it's applied, it's science. You know, and that's the fun part. Even if they'll have applied sciences. No, it's only science if it's applied. You know, like medicine, that's an applied science. You know, or engineering, or you know, the computer. These are applied. And that's why they practically work and they make money. And all the other stuff doesn't make any money. Yeah. Okay. Usually they describe the Lord's impersonal aspect, but they hardly know that the Lord's personal feature is worshipable. They are undoubtedly lacking this knowledge. Right? Because they'll talk, if you talk about him as a person, they have no problem with that. But they'll say ultimately is impersonal. And so there's no, you don't, that aspect of worshiping the person, that's not the strong feature. You know. So it's a funny mix. That's what he said before, is they don't have great knowledge. Not very, the scholars of Quran are not very advanced in knowledge. So it means, advanced in knowledge means knowledge of you know, the tattva of the Supreme Person. You know, Bhagavan, Paramatma, Brahman, they don't understand this. And then who we are as the jiva, the material world, what its nature is, they're not very advanced in this knowledge.
But it seems that this Muslim is quite honest, in the sense that he's recognizing the principles that are missing in
that's tradition. Yes. Well, it appears that because of his dress and all that, that he has to be more of a practitioner.
Yes.
And so by that, then you're going to have those that are, and they appreciate that. You see now and again, I've heard of devotees talking to, you know, these well-established imams and things like that. And many of them are very, you know, they can appreciate very much the further development and understanding of the devotion to the Lord, like that. They don't have a problem. You know,
there is no argument.
No, you always have to remember, being 500 years ago, this was before the, I always want to say wasabi, but it's not wasabi. Yeah, you know, it's hot, pungent, you know. What is it? Wahhabi. Because the Wahhabi then is it's militant. They don't tolerate anything other than very strict in what they're doing. So it's basically kind of like militant smartas. Like that. And so if they're not that, they generally, you can have these discussions more. If they're that group, then maybe less. You know, it's a very generic kind of thing.
The Chola kings did the same thing. The Chola kings in the south did the same thing.
Meaning?
The Chola dynasty kings.
Yeah, means the same thing, meaning?
They are also like, if somebody, they call for debate, if you lose, then you have to convert. If you win, then you are killed.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, so it's a very common thing. So it's to say that the Islam has that group and they do like that. All groups have that. The whole point is that's the meaning of Niyamagraha. Either you have those who don't take the rules and regulations seriously, or those who take the rules and regulations as the actual essential point of religion, rather than that proper understanding of who we are, the science of Godhead, you know, and then putting the faith towards that. So that's always the difficulty, is that it's a common thing. So to say is, oh, but they're like, no, everybody does like that. You always have. You know? I mean, it's like you had, what is it, Ashok. You know, he took Buddhism and went and spread it like that. And I always heard of the Nagababas. You know Nagababas? They did the same with the Buddhists. So I think Shankaracharya would go in, he'd preach. If they accepted, then he moved on. And if he didn't, he'd move on and the Nagababas would come in and just drive him out. So it's just one of the ways it's done. But the whole point is as we see from Lord Chaitanya, that's not necessary. The point is you change the mentality. That's what we're looking for. Change the perspective. Then it all works together. Srila Prabhupada, the saintly Muslim admitted that those who were supposedly conversant in the teachings of the Quran could not ultimately understand the essence of the Quran. Because of this, they accepted only the Lord's impersonal feature. Generally, they recite and explain this portion only. Although the transcendental body of the Lord is worshipable, most of them are unaware of this. Right? So, you know, it may be a few verses here and there, a section here and there, and they generally deal with other, because the others will give that more moral and things like that. It's like it's mentioned that, I think it was mentioned before, there was a discussion. Who was discussing? And they were saying bringing out the aspect of the spiritual and the moral points. Remember that came up? And was that here? Or maybe it was something else I was reading. But is so you're going to have spiritual points, but then you're going to have that apply. Because morality means following the laws of the Lord. And so then, you know, what would be the proper thing? So generally they'll only take those moralistic aspects. Yes. And the Lord's impersonal. Yes. Rather than the personal aspects. They won't catch that. You know, it's just like in the Upanishads, it talks about the Lord as a person. The Mayavadis don't catch that. Though it's right there. So it's the same thing. Yes?
Adi Shankara, he does a similar thing, is that he accepts Nigama, but he doesn't accept Agama. So Nigama mainly, the Veda and the Upanishad, they deal with the impersonal feature of the Lord, which is hidden. But then Purana and the Pancharatra, they deal with the Agama. So then when somebody asks him, what about Agama? He says, this is fine. It's not Veda, it's not serious enough for the discussion. So then he concentrated on that part, on Nigama. But then Agama, he said, it's not important. But we accept both. We accept because Nigama Kalpa Taro.
Yeah.
So that is the conclusion of the Veda, the Bhagavad Gita, the fruit of the Veda.
Yeah.
But then he was playing like this, so he accepted only half.
Yeah.
So that part which explained personal feature of the Lord, he just avoided.
Avoided. Yeah, because otherwise then how do you explain all that?
Yeah, he couldn't argue, so he said it's not important.
Yeah, and that'll work for them also. They'll just because so the academics do the same. Oh, that's just an opinion. But that you say it's an opinion, isn't that an opinion? You know, where does it say that this is not only an opinion? Where's the authority for that? You know, it doesn't follow our system, but where does it say that your system is the system for knowledge? You know, like that. You know, so that's the difficulty, is that they're working on certain dogmas, and so then it'll always come up. So it's a very standard. That's why also Bhaktivinoda Thakur says is that all these different philosophies can all take shelter of impersonalism very easily. The saintly Muslim continued, since you are the very same Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, please be merciful upon me. I am fallen and unfit. I have studied the Muslim scripture very extensively, but from it I cannot conclusively decide what the ultimate goal of life is or how I can approach it. Now that I have seen you, my tongue is chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. The false prestige I felt from being a learned scholar is now gone. Saying this, the saintly Muslim fell at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and requested him to speak of life's ultimate goal and the process by which it could be obtained. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Please get up. You have chanted the holy name of Krishna. Therefore, the sinful reactions you have accrued for many millions of lives are now gone. You are now pure." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then told all the Muslims there, "Chant the holy name of Krishna. Chant the holy name of Krishna." As they all began to chant, they were overwhelmed by ecstatic love. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly initiated the saintly Muslim by advising him to chant the holy name of Krishna. The Muslim's name was changed to Ramadasa. Another Patana Muslim present there was named Vijuli Khan. Vijuli Khan was very young and he was the son of the king. All the other Muslims, or Patanas, headed by Ramadasa, were his servants. Vijuli Khan also fell down at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the Lord placed his foot on his head. After bestowing his mercy upon them in this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left. All those Patana Muslims then became mendicants. Later, these very Patanas became celebrated as the Patana Vaishnavas. They toured all over the country and chanted the glorious activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Vijuli Khan became a greatly advanced devotee, and his importance was celebrated at every holy place of pilgrimage. In this way, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes. Coming to the western part of India, he bestowed good fortune upon the Yavanas and Malechas.
I wonder if they have descendants.
Well, it says they became mendicants, so you're not sure, but I think before he mentioned there's a village.
Yes,
there is a village.
There is a village, so there must be something there, or maybe that might be connected with Vijuli Khan. Like that. But I don't, yeah. Srila Prabhupada, the word Yavana means meat eater. Anyone from a meat eating community is called a Yavana. One who does not strictly observe the Vedic regulative principles is called a Malecha. These words do not refer to any particular man. Even if a person is born in a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra family, he is a Malecha or Yavana if he does not strictly follow the regulative principles or if he eats meat. Yeah. Okay, so I think I always had it backwards. I was always saying Yavana, Malecha was the meat eater, and Yavana meant doesn't follow the Vedas. It's the other way around.
Yeah, elsewhere it is mentioned that Malechas are Greeks and Yavanas are Turks.
Yavan is Greek in Hebrew. Greece.
Yavan.
Means Greece is called Yavan.
Yeah.
Okay. Called that one, right? That's all right. Yeah, because I think he said he started from Turkey, then they shifted over. Because originally they were kind of in that northern part, and then eventually that became Turkey, and then they shifted. So, yeah, one's the Malechas, one's the Yavanas.
But basically the same.
Yeah.
There were two types of Muslim invasion. One came from Turkey, and then later the Mughals came from the north.
Yeah. Okay. So, sitting on the throne was which ones?
Well, for a certain period of time, it was the Turkish rule.
So, Humayun would have been Turkish?
Humayun is in the line of Babur.
Oh, means Babur. But Babur, he was the first one, Babur.
No, he's the first Mughal.
But he was Mughal.
Yeah.
Okay, and then? Because they always hear him talk about as Turks, because the Mughal Empire also went over to there. Could it have been that same group, but from that side? Because I heard it was kind of a tradition on that side, as the father wouldn't let go and the son couldn't wait, so at some point the son would put the father under house arrest. And each one of them is like that.
Yeah.
So even Akbar, he was put under house arrest by his son.
First was the Persians.
Huh?
First who invaded were the Persians, not the Turkish.
The Persians.
Persian. Muhammad Ghori was Persian.
Yes.
Oh, he was Persian. Okay. Hmm. Okay. When
the Mughals came from Turkey.
Okay.
Because in South, all the Muslims are called Turki. They are from Turkey.
Oh, okay.
You still call them, and they belong to Turkey.
Okay, Turkey.
At least the Telugu people. Hyderabad.
The Hyderabad is a. They're from Turkey. The guys in Tamil Nadu, we don't know about, but
because the Nizams, they had.
Oh, okay, Nizams. Okay, so the Nizams saw their line back to Turkey. Okay. Verses 2:14 to 2:29. Lord Chaitanya continues towards Prayag. 2:18, 2:14 to 2:21. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu next went to a holy place of pilgrimage called Sodukshetra. Like, see, here he talked to these persons. It's a matter of if they're serious or not. So in this group, he's come across them before, but this group was very serious. But we saw before, those Buddhists, they weren't. They tried to make tricks like that. So you see, whoever was sincere, then they would take it up. He took his bath in the Ganges there and started for Prayag on the path along the banks of the Ganges. At Sodukshetra, the Lord requested the Sanodiya Brahman and Rajaputa Krishnadas to return home, but with folded hands they began to speak as follows. They prayed, "Let us go to Prayag with you. If we do not go, then we shall again get the when shall we again get the association of your lotus feet? This country is mainly occupied by Muslims. At any place, someone can create a disturbance. And although your companion, Balabhadra Bhattacharya, is a learned scholar, he does not know how to speak the local language." Hearing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted their proposal by smiling mildly. Thus, those two persons continued to accompany him. Whoever got to see, because you saw that Balabhadra got very disturbed when they came along, and they couldn't care less. And they just said, you know, hey, I got all these things and all that. If I shout loud enough, they'll be here. So, you know, like that. So.
The one is a diplomat. I know all the big shots.
Yeah. The other's a diplomat, and the other's got, you know, in the position of authority. So then, thus those two persons continued to accompany him. Whoever got to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would feel himself overwhelmed with ecstatic love and would begin to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Whoever met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became a Vaishnava, and whoever met that Vaishnava also became a Vaishnava. In this way, all the towns and villages became Vaishnava, one after another. Just as the Lord inundated South India on his tour there, he also inundated the western part of the country with love of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada. According to some opinions, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited Kurukshetra while going to Prayag from Vrindavan. There is a temple of Bhadrakali in Kurukshetra. Near that temple, there is a temple containing the deity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. 2:18, 2:22. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finally arrived at Prayag and for 10 successive days bathed in the confluence of the rivers Jamuna and Ganges during the festival of Makara Sankranti, Magh Mela. Srila Prabhupada. Actually, the word Triveni indicates the confluence of three rivers, namely the Ganges, Yamuna, and Saraswati. Presently, the Saraswati river is not visible, but the river Ganges and the river Jamuna merge at Allahabad. 2:18, 2:23, 2:29. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's visit to Vrindavan and his activities there are unlimited. Even Lord Sesha, who has thousands of hoods, cannot reach the end of his activities. What ordinary living being can describe the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? I have only indicated the general direction in the form of a summary. The pastimes and methods of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are uncommon. Unfortunate is he who cannot believe even after hearing all these things. From beginning to end, the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are uncommon. Just hear them with faith and accept them as true and correct. Whoever argues about this is a great fool. He intentionally and personally brings the thunderbolt down upon his head. The pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are an ocean of nectar. Even a drop of this ocean can inundate the whole world with transcendental bliss. Praying, so even just one drop, just one feature is enough to inundate the whole world. You know, so that's why he's saying, he's just giving a summary, and that's enough to inundate. Like that. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishnadas, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. Conclusion. One must see things as they are through the mercy of a spiritual master. Otherwise, if one tries to see Krishna directly, he may mistake an ordinary man for Krishna, or Krishna for an ordinary man. 99 purport. Although Balabhadra Bhattacharya was personally serving Lord Krishna in his role as a devotee, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he mistook Lord Krishna for an ordinary man and an ordinary man for Lord Krishna, because he did not follow the rules set down by Shastra and Guru. Right? Remember, he got involved in that. They were seeing, the locals were seeing a fisherman out in the Kaliya Lake and thought that Krishna was out dancing on Kaliya's hoods. You know, it happened in the day, but they've gotten it. So he wanted to go see. And he was leaving Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna, to go see somebody who was not Krishna. Right? So he thought Lord Chaitanya, not the supreme, like that. So that's the point. One has to be very careful. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living in Vrindavan, the inhabitants considered him an ordinary human being, and they mistook the fisherman to be Krishna. Every human being is prone to make such mistakes. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was mistaken for an ordinary sannyasi. The fisherman was mistaken for Krishna, and the torchlight was mistaken for bright jewels on Kaliya's hoods. 108 purport. Maya is so strong that even a person like Balabhadra Bhattacharya, who is constantly staying with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was influenced by the words of fools. He wanted to see Krishna directly by going to Kaliya Daha, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being the original spiritual master, would not allow his servant to fall into such foolishness. Right? So, as the spiritual master, then he's seeing that he doesn't do that. Then he has the right perspective. 100 purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately stated that a living being, however exalted he may be, should never be compared to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching protests the monistic philosophy of the Mayavad school. The central point of Krishna consciousness, that the jiva, the living entity, can never be accepted as Krishna or Vishnu. 111 purport. The Vedas clearly state that the living entities are subordinate parts and parcels of the Supreme. Eko bahunam yo vidhati kaman. The Supreme Being, Krishna, maintains all living entities. 113 purport. So the Guru will represent, but he never is. So that's what Prabhupada says, as good as, because he's representing, but he never is. So one has to always be very careful there. So that's the point, is representing, that's where the stature is. Not that now, oh, because he's the guru, now he can do whatever he likes. Like, sometimes you see, you know, it's very common, you know, that people come up and they're guru, so then they say everything, whatever they like, have their own philosophy, like that. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, is always full of all transcendental bliss, and is accompanied by the potencies known as Hladini and Samvit. The conditioned soul, however, is always covered by ignorance and embarrassed by the threefold miseries of life. Thus he is a treasure house of all kinds of tribulations. So poetic, right? A treasure house of all kinds of tribulations. Yeah. So when the living entity then comes under the protection of the Lord, surrenders to the Lord, then that same Hladini and Samvit, then from that, then that's will be the combination of his devotional service at this Bhakti Devi, and then he will get that taste of devotional service. Because Samvit means that willpower, the one that you want to do something. Right? Icha is the desire, right? You know, what you'd like to do. And then that willingness to do something, that activity. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, whether we use the word desire wouldn't be the thing. I think it's feeling would be the thing. You think, you feel, then you will, then you do. Right? So that doing, that's under something. Right? And so when it's done to please Krishna, then that combination, that makes bhakti. Right? Text 141. The puzzled people who visited Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were actually seeing Lord Krishna, but they were mistaken in thinking that Lord Krishna had come to Kaliya Lake. They all said that they had seen Krishna directly performing his pastimes on the hoods of the serpent Kaliya, and that the jewels on Kaliya's hoods were blazing brilliantly. Because they were speculating with their imperfect knowledge, they saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as an ordinary human being, and a boatman's light in the lake as Krishna. One must see things as they are through the mercy of a spiritual master. Otherwise, if one tries to see Krishna directly, he may mistake an ordinary man for Krishna or Krishna for an ordinary man. Everyone has to see Krishna according to the verdict of Vedic scriptures presented by the self-realized spiritual master. A sincere person is able to see Krishna through the transparent Vaya media of Sri Gurudev, the spiritual master. Unless one is enlightened by the knowledge given by the spiritual master, he cannot see things as they are, even though he remains constantly with the spiritual master. Right? So being with isn't enough. You have to see according to the directions given by the spiritual master, and through that, then one can understand. So Balabhata Bhattacharya, he was there serving and all that, but if he's not hearing and applying that knowledge, he won't know. But that's why Vani is more important than Vapu.
Maharaj, can we say that Balabhata Bhattacharya was missing it was Shastra Chakshu?
Shastra Chakshu.
He was missing that point?
At least in this aspect. He might have been seeing in other ways. Saw how he could arrange nicely in his cooking and what things in the forest you could eat and all that kind of stuff. And So these things are there, but to understand the actual conclusion of the Vedas, about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then that devotion to him, that then was not as developed as it could be. But then we see it became, by Lord Chaitanya's grace, by hearing from the spiritual master, then he could understand. Right? So the point is hearing from, as the point is the spiritual master. It happens to be the founder, Lord Chaitanya, Krishna himself. But he was he understood because of, does that make sense? So in other words, same ways, we may associate with the founder Acharya, but it's because hearing his instructions, that's how we understand.
Yes.
So that's the important thing. Yes?
Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he explains the point that the modern civilization is based on visualization, but our tradition is based on Shabda.
Yes.
So here we see an example where to hear from the spiritual master, it's important.
Mm-hmm.
And to go and see Krishna, whatever you see, it's an illusion. It's not there.
Yes.
So always following the Shabda, it's higher approach, the absolute, than trying to see him.
Yes.
Because even if we want to see, we had this discussion with the students, they couldn't follow that logic.
Yes.
Because you hear, then that vision through the hearing process appears in the person's purified mind, and then you say, if you speak again on you, or you write your realizations, but it's all based on Shabda, it's based on sound.
Yes.
It's not based on visualization.
Yes.
But nowadays everything is based, even education, it's based on visualization. If it isn't there, people just can't concentrate on anything.
Yeah. And then more New Agey is experiential.
Yeah,
so that means it's third class.
That's third level.
Yeah, yeah. So Vedic is first class. All your bullet points, this and that, it's all the second, and then that you somehow or another experience it.
Yeah,
it's a good point.
That's why when the devotees were in Parashram, the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and they went to Darshan, say, so, did you enjoy your eyes?
Yeah. Right? Yes, yes. So what did you see?
And hearing, you're going to enjoy your eyes.
Yeah. Okay. Chapter 19. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Srila Rupa Goswami. Okay. Pratigya. Supreme knowledge consists of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead and our relationship with Him and acting according to that relationship. Right, so, Vastu Traya. Right. Adhyaya Prakashika. A summary of this chapter has been given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amrita Prabaha Bhashya. Meeting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a village called Ramakeli. Two brothers, Rupa and Sanatana, began to devise means to get out of their government service. They appointed some brahmanas to perform Purushcharana ceremonies and chant the holy name of Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami deposited 10,000 gold coins with a grocer. Yeah, now gold coins like 7 grams or that, or sometimes, I think, but before they used to be, I can't remember how much, but it was much more. Can't remember what was the traditional gold coins if you go back, you know, a few hundred years. No? No one knows?
I think it's regional. In different regions, it
was. Oh, it's different. Yeah, but that would... Okay, yeah. Okay, that could be. But I think...
In Britain, in Russia, it was different.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering what it would have been, you know, in India at that time. I kind of remember reading something about what they used to be, how big they were. But the point was, is, you know, it was big enough. So even if you say, you know, just being, you know... Because what is it? A tola is 11 grams, right? And then after that, then I think, I can't remember what's the next one up from that. But even you're saying like that, so that means that's 30,000 rupees for one coin if you're saying, you know, like 10 grams. Right? And so that times 10,000. Now that was a boatload of gold coins. Yes.
I mean, later in the pastime, when Sanatana runs away with his servant for 8 coins, the guy was ready to kill him.
Yeah, no, just that.
That means it's something.
It was worth it, serious. You know, because also, I mean, things didn't cost much, you know.
2 people, you know, for 8 coins.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, very serious.
Because the Mughal time, it was 11 grams.
11 grams, so a tola. Yeah, because generally it's 11. Okay. Yeah, that was the whole point, because this would have been in the Mughal time. So you've been getting it from that. So it would have been 11, would have been the standard. So
10,000 points.
Yeah. So that's you know, that's just what was left. He's already distributed half to the Vaishnavas and given a quarter to the family. So this is the last quarter. So that means he gave away 20,000. 10 gave to the family and 10 he kept, it says here, with the grocers. The rice and dal guy there.
$10 million.
Huh?
$10 million what?
Only.
So that's 70,000.
Okay. That's not bad.
The gross 10 million.
You sure? Because if you have 30, times 10 is 3 lakhs. Times 100 is 3 million. Times 1,000 is 30 million.
$10 million.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. I was thinking, how do you get that in rupees? Okay, dollars, okay. And the balance he brought in 2 boats, not even one boat, you know, 2 boats, to a place called Bakla Chandradwipa. There he divided this money among the brahmanas, Vaishnavas, and his relatives, and a portion he kept for emergency measures and personal needs. He was informed that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to Vrindavan from Jagannath Puri through the forest of Madhya Pradesh. Therefore, he sent 2 people to Jagannath Puri to find out when the Lord would leave for Vrindavan. In this way, Rupa Goswami retired. But Sanatana Goswami told the Nawab that he was sick and could not attend to his work. Giving this excuse, he sat at home and studied Srimad Bhagavatam with learned Brahmin scholars. The Nawab Shah, Nawab Hussein Shah, first sent his personal physician to see what the real facts were. Then he personally came to see why Sanatana was not attending his official business. Knowing that he wanted to resign his post, the Nawab had him arrested and imprisoned. The Nawab then went off to attack Orissa. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started for Vrindavan, through the forest of Madhya Pradesh, Jharkhand, Rupa Goswami left home and sent news to Sanatana that he was leaving with his younger brother Anupam, Malika, to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Rupa Goswami finally reached Prayag and met with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for 10 successive days. During this time, Vallabha Bhatta extended an invitation to the Lord with great respect. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced Srila Rupa Goswami to Vallabha Bhatta. After this, a Brahmin scholar named Raghupati Upadhyaya arrived and discussed Krishna consciousness with the Lord. Kaviraj Goswami then extensively describes the living condition of Sri Rupa and Sanatana at Vrindavan. During the 10 days of Prayag, Srila Rupa Goswami was instructed by the Lord, who gave him the basic principles of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The Lord then sent Srila Rupa Goswami to Vrindavan. The Lord himself returned to Varanasi and stayed at the home of Chandrasekhar. Shloka Anusharanam 1-35. Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami leave their government posts. 36-114. Srila Rupa Goswami and Anupam meet the Lord in Prayag. 115-135. The characteristics of Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami. 136-237. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs Srila Rupa Goswami about Bhakti Rasa. Verses 238-257. Lord Chaitanya returns to Varanasi. Verses 1-135. 219-15. Before the creation of this cosmic manifestation, the Lord enlightened the heart of Lord Brahma with the details of the creation and manifested the Vedic knowledge. In exactly the same way, the Lord, being anxious to revive the Vrindavan pastimes of Lord Krishna, impregnated the heart of Sri Rupa Goswami with spiritual potency. By this potency, Sri Rupa Goswami could revive the activities of Krishna in Vrindavan, activities almost lost to memory. In this way, he spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. All glories to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Lord Nityananda, all glories to Advaita Chandra, and all glories to all the devotees of the Lord. After meeting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the village of Ramakeli, the brothers Rupa and Sanatana returned to their homes. The two brothers devised a means whereby they could give up their material activities. For this purpose, they appointed two brahmanas and paid them a large amount of money. The brahmanas performed religious ceremonies and chanted the holy name of Krishna so that the two brothers might attain shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very soon. Srila Prabhupada. Purush Charana is a ritualistic ceremony performed under the guidance of an expert spiritual master or a brahmana. It is performed for the fulfillment of certain desires. One rises early in the morning, chants the Hare Krishna mantra, performs archana by the Artik ceremony, and worships the deities. Udriti, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Chapter 2. Upon making this decision, the two brothers at once took steps to leave their material engagements. And they appointed two learned brahmanas to perform certain Vedic ritualistic religious rituals that would enable them to achieve complete freedom for the devotional service of Krishna. These preliminary activities are known as Purushcharya. These ritualistic functions demand that three times a day one worships and offers respects to his forefathers, offers oblations in a fire, and respectfully offers food to a learned brahman. Five items, time, worship, offering of respect, offering of oblation in the fire, and offering of food to a brahmana, comprise Purushcharya. This and other rituals are mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, the authoritative book of directions. So, yeah, here, just on this, interesting how he says, the authoritative book of directions. So it's not, oh, it's just written to, you know, engage the karma kandis and this and that. No, it's the actual, you know, proper way of doing things. And then in light of that, how Prabhupada has given us direction, then we apply it. So, time. 219, 267. At this time, Sri Rupa Goswami returned home, taking with him large quantities of riches loaded in boats. Srila Rupa Goswami divided the wealth that he brought back home. He gave 50% in charity to Brahmanas and Vaishnavas and 25% to his relatives. Srila Prabhupada, this is a practical example of how one should divide his money and retire from household life. 50% of one's money should be distributed to qualified and pure devotees of the Lord. 25% may be given to family members, and 25% may be kept for personal use in case of emergency. 219, 8 to 16. He kept one-fourth of his wealth with a respectable Brahmana. He kept this for his personal safety because he was expecting some legal complications. He deposited 10,000 coins, which were later spent by Sri Sanatana Goswami in the custody of a local Bengali grocer. This also gives you the idea that the 10,000 was out of that quarter. So that means there was even more. What we were saying before is like that. Okay. Sri Rupa Goswami heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had returned to Jagannath Puri and was preparing to go to Vrindavan through the forest.
The 10,000 was just to be given as a bribe to somebody.
Yeah. I mean, all of it was keeping for legal stuff, so it would all be, you know. Sri Rupa Goswami sent two people to Jagannath Puri to find out when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would depart for Vrindavan. Sri Rupa Goswami told the two men, "You are to return quickly and let me know when he will depart. Then I shall make the proper arrangements." While Sanatana Goswami was in Godadesh, he was thinking, "The Nawab is very pleased with me. I certainly have an obligation. The Nawab somehow or other becomes angry with me. I shall be greatly relieved. That is my conclusion." End quote. On the pretext of bad health, Sanatana Goswami remained home. Thus he gave up government service and did not go to the royal court. The greedy masters of his clerical and secretarial staff performed the government duties while Sanatana personally remained home and discussed the revealed scriptures. Srila Prabhupada. Sanatana Goswami was the minister in charge of the government secretariat. And his assistants, the undersecretaries and clerks, all belonged to the Kayastha community. Formerly, the Kayasthas belonged to the clerical and secretarial staff of the government. And later, if one served in such a post, he was called a Kayastha. Eventually, if a person could not identify himself as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, he used to introduce himself as a Kayastha to get a wealthy and honorable position. In Bengal, it is said that if one cannot give the identity of his caste, he calls himself a Kayastha. On the whole, the Kayastha community is a mixture of all castes, and it especially includes those engaged in clerical or secretarial work. Materially, such people are always busy occupying responsible government posts. So that means all the IAS officers technically are Kayasthas, right? When Sanatana Goswami was relaxing and feeling inclined to retire from the government service, many Kayasthas on his secretarial staff were very eager to occupy his post. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that when Sanatana Goswami was a government minister and the Kayasthas who assisted him saw that he was reluctant to continue, they became very expert in their duties, right? Yeah, just to show that, yeah, I'm the man, you know. Sanatana Goswami was a Brahmin belonging to the Saraswat Brahmin community. It is said that when he resigned, a subordinate named Purandara Khan, who was a Kayastha, occupied his post.
Muslims also followed Parameshwari? Purandara Khan means he was a Muslim.
Yeah. I mean, he may have been. I mean, he had Dabir Kash and Sakir Malik, so. You never know what the background is. I mean, in India, all means original Muslims, they were all Hindus at one point, you know, until somebody sprinkled some water or something.
What I meant, they didn't follow this Brahmin Varshi, Kshatriya Varshi and Shudra.
Who?
The Muslims.
No, no, but that they knew that certain ones did better work than others.
Okay.
You know. So that would be the thing. You know, one, they would be practical. Whoever was actually good, because you do have that. You have that thing. It means, even in the old world, you'd have that. I mean, the Romans had it. I think the Greeks had it, and others. That you had those who, you know, were from high families and things like that, and wealthy and that. And if they had qualifications, they got a good position. But others, by qualification, could work their way up to the same position or even higher. You know, so that was there. So. Some of these persons were from, you know, very well-to-do positions, and others, they worked their way up. You know, so it may be that they would kind of look at both. 2.19.17. Srila Sanatana Goswami used to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam in an assembly of 20 or 30 learned Brahmin scholars. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the following commentary on the words Bhagavat Vichar, as confirmed in the Mundaka Upanishad 1.1, 4 through 5. There are two kinds of educational systems. Dve vidye veditavya iti hasma yad brahma vido varanti para chaiva para cha Tatra para rigvedo yajur vedaha samavedo tarva vedaha siksha kalpo vyakaranam niruptam chando jyotisham iti ata para yaya tad aksharam abhi gamyate. There are two kinds of educational systems. One deals with transcendental knowledge, paravidya, and the other with material knowledge, aparavidya. All the Vedas, the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, and Atharva Veda, along with their corollaries, known as Siksha, Kalpa, Vyakaran, Nirupta, Chanda, and Jyotish, belong to the inferior system of material knowledge, Aparavidya. But by Paravidya, one can understand the Akshara, Brahman, or the Absolute Truth. End quote. As far as the Vedic literature is concerned, the Vedanta Sutra is accepted as the Paravidya. Srimad Bhagavatam is an explanation of that paravidya. Those who aspire for liberation, mukti or moksha, and introduce themselves as vaidantika are also equal to those groups aspiring to improve religious, dharma, economic development, artha, and sense gratification, kama. Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha are called chaturvarga. They are all within the system of inferior material knowledge. Any literature giving information about the spiritual world, spiritual life, spiritual identity, and the spirit soul is called paravidya. Srimad Bhagavatam does not have anything to do with the materialistic way of life. It gives transcendental information to educate people in the superior system of paravidya. Sanatana Goswami was engaged in discussing the Bhagavat Vidya, which means he discussed transcendental superior knowledge. Those who are karmis, jnanis, or yogis are not actually fit to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam. Only Vaishnavas or pure devotees are fit to discuss that literature, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam itself, 12.13.18. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin Paramahamsyam Ekam Amalam Jnanam Param Giyate Yatra Jnana Viraga bhakti sahitam naishkarmyam avishkritam tach trinvan supatan vicharana paro bhaktya vimuchyan naraha. Although the Srimad Bhagavatam is counted among the Puranas, it is called the spotless Purana because it does not discuss anything material. So it's paravidya, even though it's within the category. It's written in the style like aparavidya. So, you know, like before, you're saying that was it nigama and agama. So it'll be considered within agama, but it's actually nigama because it's the actual commentary on Vedanta Sutra. But the advantage is that it can practically show how all the agamas are connected to the Lord through devotion. While in Vedanta Sutra, it won't get into that detail. You have to work that out yourself. Or you have to be, you know, like Shankar said, first take sannyas, then we'll talk. Like this. But this is then, you see, Bhagavatam, how everybody in every position, they were all great devotees. Because it does not discuss anything material, it is liked by transcendental Vaishnava devotees. The subject matter found in Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for Paramahamsas. As it is said, Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam Vedyam. Srimad Bhagavatam 112. A Paramahamsa is one who does not live in the material world and who does not envy others. So you see those who don't live in the scene, but they live out in the forest, and then they create all kinds of trouble. There was one, I don't remember when it was, but some time back, there was a guy who rejected society, moved out into his cabin in the forest like that, but then he was constantly sending parcels and blowing things up.
Remember? I think it was Ted Kaczynski.
Yeah, his name. But he was called something.
The Unabomber.
The Unabomber. Yeah, because he had a thing about, I don't know if it was corporate or government, whatever it was, he had some chip on his shoulder. So he's not a Paramahamsa. So he's retired from the social life, but he was envious. And so therefore he created so much trouble. It took him a long time to find him like that. And so here is that they're retired from social life, but they're not envious. They don't, that, you know, others are involved, this and that. That's not a problem for them. Like you see, is for many is that they renounce, but then they have an aversion to those who are not renounced.
Yes.
So that's the whole thing, is that they know everything, how to connect it back to Krishna. So whatever position one's in, that's what they do. They have no interest in dealing anything, and that's how they're engaged. And others, depending on their position, they engage themselves accordingly. Yeah. In Srimad Bhagavatam, devotional service is discussed to arouse the living entity to the transcendental position of jnana, knowledge, and vairagya, renunciation. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.12, Tach Shradhana Munayo Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya Pashant Yatmani Chatmanam Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. This is not sentiment. Knowledge and renunciation can be attained through devotional service. Bhaktya Shruta Grihitaya, that is, by arousing one's dormant devotional consciousness, Krishna consciousness. When Krishna consciousness is aroused, it relieves one from food of activity, activity for economic improvement and material enjoyment. Because once you get that higher engagement, you're not doing things for yourself. And once you get that taste, there's no interest. That, you know, so therefore, even if you have a taste, you keep yourself engaged in devotional service, you won't be doing anything material. Mm-hmm. But once you get a taste for devotional service, there's no interest in doing anything material. Mm-hmm. Like that. That's so. This relief is technically called naishkarmya, and when one is relieved, he is no longer interested in working hard for sense gratification. Right, so it just says working hard for sense gratification. It didn't say working hard. Probably that. We work hard, but for Krishna. Right? Srimad Bhagavatam is Srila Vyasadeva's last mature contribution, and one should read and hear it in an assembly of realized souls while engaging in devotional service. At such a time, one can be liberated from all material bondage. This was the course taken by Sanatan Swami, who retired from government service to study Srimad Bhagavatam with learned scholars. Right, so he took up that path of the Paravidya, and then studied with learned scholars, because then different ones can give different understandings, you know, the realizations and all that, and so then you can just go deeper and deeper. And then he being qualified, he can ask questions, they can discuss.
Maharaj is special to one student for 20 teachers.
It's Sanatana Goswami. He was qualified.
Yes.
You know, it's like in South to train one, Shankaracharya, the junior. When they're young, when they do all the studying and all that, they have 20 Brahmins to teach them. Like that. So, you know, like it says, it takes a village to raise a child. Yeah. 2.19.18. While Sanatana Goswami was studying Srimad Bhagavatam in the assembly of learned Brahmanas, right, it wasn't just he was just casually reading on his own. One day the Nawab of Bengal and another person suddenly appeared. Srila Prabhupada. The full name of the Nawab of Bengal, Hussein Shah, was Aludina Sayada Husseina Saha Sharifa Makka. Oh, so that's where it comes from. He's the big Makka. You have that saying? No? Someone's the big Makka? You don't mess with him. He's the big Leo. So here it is. That's his last name, is Makka. So that means he's the big dude. So, so many things they picked up from over this side.
In India, they use it in a derogatory way. You're irritated so much.
Okay, you mean somebody who's trying to control everything and that, you know. Okay. And he ruled Bengal for 23 years. Mm-hmm. From 1420 to 1443, Shakabda era. A.D. 1498 to 1521. Sanatana Goswami was studying Srimad Bhagavatam with the scholars in the year 1424, A.D. 1502. So this was just 4 years after he had taken up. Because he was from 1498 to 1521. So in 1502. 4 years later than he was studying. So they took it up, but they were only doing this for a shorter time. So it's important, he made a point before, is that how it's being explained there, then this is the way it is. One shouldn't doubt it. So it's important that how Chaitanya Charitamrita, how the Acharya is explaining, this is how the pastimes went down. In the modern historical books, they may have difference of opinion on what happened. But the point is history, you know, has the point is, what is it, you know, it's written by the victors, it's history is just, lies that everybody accepts. Or, you know, there's all kinds of things to describe it. And these are people that work in the field, you know. And then you have the aspect is that you have materialists who make mistakes. And like we were discussing before with the academics, is they have their own opinion. They'll say, no, we're the ones without opinion. And so then they may give a certain aspect, something they like, or the atheistic, they won't like certain things. So then they'll try to present it in other ways like that. And so one has to be very, very careful. Because sometimes devotees who are into history get into things, you know, what's going on, and then they'll see things that are different than what this is said here. And then they'll try to present that no, that's actually the way it is. Bhaktivinoda Thakura was very careful, and so I mean, Krishnadas Kaviraj is very careful about don't do that. Does that make sense? Yes.
I mean, British specifically worked on this to bring everything into recent history in India, just to show that everything, you know, whatever important happened, it's after Christ, not before that. Because otherwise, they're shown not in the best light, that there was an advanced civilization, but not in their area.
Yeah, yeah.
So they shifted everything up. And made it like, you know, a few hundred years back, 700 years back, this and that.
Wow.
So that was,
Yes, so they'll always do that. Yes, and then there'll also be things depending upon who's writing the history. And you see as things change, they rewrite the history.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the main things in 1984, is that something changes politically, they rewrite the history. You know, people say, oh, this is not good, but that's what goes on. You know, it's just like someone was telling me the other day, they were seeing kind of like some historical thing that it was supposed to be based on kind of, you know how they do those kind of things where it's based on kind of loosely on the facts of the area and the technique, and then within that they'll write some kind of, they'll make a novel out of drama, things like that. There's a technical name for that. But where it's taking all the historical facts that you know and then putting together and bringing it alive like that. So like that. And so at the time that it was being there, then in this particular country, there would have been only, you know, all the aristocracy, all the nobles, all everybody like that, all of them would have been from the, you know, how you say, the more, how you say, lighter colored kind of skin tone like that, you know, and of generally those following in the line of, how you say, you know, Paul, you know, like that, and more likely than like this. And so, but because that really doesn't fly these days, you know, that so many of the lords and ladies and this and that, they were all black. Well, at that time in history, those guys were the servants. They were slaves. You know, England was one of the first countries to ban slavery before America did.
Yeah.
You know, but the point is the history point that they're taking, they're having them all like this. And so that's the whole thing, is then people think that's the way it is, when it wasn't. So, but that's the way they want to make it look like, you know, we were all the enlightened, we were all the this and that. You know, so they adjusted.
They had slaves from Ireland. Brits, the first slave, they were from that side.
Oh, okay. Means they were Irish themselves.
Yeah.
Oh.
They brought them in here.
Oh, I see. They landed there and then.
Really horrible condition.
Yeah, no, it's all. They didn't do a good job. You know, say. Slavery was an African tradition amongst themselves, but the Europeans somehow took it to another whole another level.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's just they really, really made a mess out of it. Yeah. So it's a. Yeah, so that's why one has to be very, very careful. Is that, you know, the historical points, then you have to see as the acharyas give it. That's the basis of it. And if any detail, you know, fits into this, then that's nice. But if it doesn't, it opposes this, then one should be very careful. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then people will take and adjust things and, you know, stuff like that. To 1919. As soon as all the Brahmins and Sanatana Goswami saw the Nawab appear, they all stood up and respectfully gave him a sitting place to honor him. Srila Prabhupada. Although Nawab Hussain Shah was a Mlecha Yavana, he was nonetheless the governor of the country. And the learned scholars and Sanatana Goswami offered him all the respect due a king or a governor. When a person occupies an exalted executive post, one should consider that he has acquired the grace of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 10:41, Lord Krishna said, Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam srimad urjitam eva va. Tat tad eva vagacha tvam mama tejom sha sambhava. Know that all opulent, beautiful, glorious creations spring but from a spark of my splendor. Wherever we see something exalted, we must consider it part of the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A powerful man, vibhuti mat sattvam, is one who has attained the grace of the Lord or has derived some power from him. In the Bhagavad Gita 7:10, Krishna says, Tejas, Tejas Vinam Aham, I am the power of the powerful. The learned Brahmin scholar showed respect to Nawab Hussain Shah because he represented a fraction of Krishna's power. Mm-hmm. Right? So you could say, oh, but he's a Mlecha Yavana. No, but he's representing that power. Otherwise, you're not seeing things connected to Krishna. Yes, he may be doing that, but then why is he in that position of authority? Why does he have that power? Like that. 2:19, 20-27. The Nawab said, I sent my physician to you, and he has reported that you are not diseased. Okay. As far as he could see, you are completely healthy. I am depending upon you to carry out so many of my activities. But you have given up your governmental duties to sit here at home. You have spoiled all my activities. What is your intention? Please tell me frankly. Sanatana Goswami replied, you can no longer expect any service from me. Please arrange for someone else to attend to the management. Right? You know, because he wants to know what's his thing, you know, what's the idea? Because it could be anything like that. But he's just mentioned, no, I don't want to continue the service. Becoming angry with Sanatana Goswami, the Nawab said, your elder brother, referring to himself, is acting just like a plunderer. By killing many living entities, your elder brother has destroyed all Bengal. Now here you are destroying all my plans.
He's considering, I remember reading this quite a few times, and it didn't kick in until I looked at the language. Your older brother, not Rupa, I am your older brother.
Yeah, no, he's considering that Sanatana Goswami is his brother.
Yes.
You know, that he's considering him that close and that, you know, that's why he's coming there, sitting down. Otherwise, he would have called him to the court. But no. He says he's not sick, he's there. He's there with all these Brahmins. He's just sitting there, you know, and he's done so nice. So what is he going to do? So he went personally himself.
And it's the same with Lord Chaitanya with Chanka. He says, my dear uncle.
Yes. Yeah.
Prabhupada explains, you know, when you live in the same village, it's family.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. So that's the reason that Sanatana Goswami couldn't leave him, because he never misbehaved, so
right.
It is not proper etiquette to leave.
Yes. So that's why he said make him angry.
Yeah. Now that he put him in jail, now he's no longer obliged.
Yeah. So he said, unless I make him angry with me, he can't get out of the service. Because otherwise, as that close relationship, he'll always be obliged. So very clever. Sanatana Goswami is so smart. Becoming angry, Sanatana Goswami, the Nawab said, okay, we said that. Sanatana Goswami said, you are the supreme ruler of Bengal and are completely independent. Whenever someone commits a fault, you punish him accordingly. Hearing this, the Nawab of Bengal stood up and returned to his home. He ordered the arrest of Sanatana Goswami so that he would not be able to leave. So he's put him in jail just so he doesn't escape, and he thinks, you know, we'll continue the discussion. You know. Yeah, how's the rest? Srila Prabhupada. It is said that the relationship between the Nawab of Bengal and Sanatana Goswami was very intimate. The Nawab used to consider Sanatana Goswami his younger brother, and when Sanatana Goswami showed a very strong intention to resign, the Nawab, feeling familial affection, essentially said, I am your elder brother, and I do not look after the state management. My only business is attacking other states with my soldiers and fighting everywhere as a plunderer. Because I am a meat-eater, Yavana, I am used to hunting all kinds of living entities. In this way, I am destroying all kinds of living entities in Bengal. While engaged in this destructive business, I am hoping that you will tend to the administration of the state. Since I, your elder brother, am engaged in such a destructive business, you, being my younger brother, should look after the state management. If you do not, how will things continue? Right? So he's actually leaving him to rule the state. And his state was quite big, because you see, being a warrior, he's going out and conquering. Like he said, he went after this to conquer Orissa. So I think a northern portion of Orissa was part of the kingdom. Like that, you know, and then Bengal meant, you know, you had Bangladesh and all that, so he would have, you know, everything around. So it's a very big area. It would probably, you could say, of India, the most populous area. You know, like that. This talk was based on a family relationship, and Sanatana Goswami also replied in an intimate and joking way. Essentially told the Nawab, my dear brother, you are the independent ruler of Bengal, You can act in whatever way you like, and if someone commits a fault, you can punish him accordingly. In other words, Sanatana Goswami was saying that since the Nawab was accustomed to acting like a plunderer, he should go ahead and take action. Since Sanatana was not showing much enthusiasm for performing his duty, the Nawab should dismiss him from his service. Right, so he just see, oh, he doesn't want to do it, so just get rid of him. And he's independent, so then he'll run his country, his place. The Nawab could understand the intention of Sanatana Goswami's statement. He therefore left in an angry mood and ordered Sanatana Goswami's arrest. Right, because he didn't want him to leave. Right? 219.28. At this time, the Nawab was going to attack the province of Orissa, and he told Sanatana Goswami, come along with me. Srila Prabhupada. You know, so since he was going, he wanted to keep him with him so he doesn't disappear. Srila Prabhupada. Hussein Shah attacked the neighboring province of Orissa in 1424 Shakabda era, AD 1502. At that time, he conquered the feudal princes there. Vriti. Historical records state that Hussein Shah first attacked Orissa as soon as Prataparudra's reign began. Although Prataparudra was only 17 at that time, he was able to drive Hussein Shah's invaders back north across their borders in about 3 years. After securing Orissa's northern borders, Prataparudra had to defend his southern borders for almost a decade. While Prataparudra was on said southern expedition, Hussein Shah again invaded Orissa. But upon Prataparudra's return from the south, Hussein Shah's army was again pushed out of the territory. After this, minor skirmishes continued at the Bengal-Orissa border for the duration of Hussein Shah's reign. Right? You know, so they'll say he came in and did this and that and so many things, but no, this is 219.29-33. Sanatana Goswami replied, you are going to Orissa to give pain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For this reason, I am powerless to go with you. Because Jagannath is down there, it's his place, right? The Nawab again arrested Sanatana Goswami and kept him in prison. Right, so before it must have been, like you said, at the house, and then after that, and then now he put him in the prison. At this time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed for Vrindavan from Jagannath Puri. The two persons who went to Jagannath Puri to inquire about the Lord's departure returned and informed Rupa Goswami that the Lord had already departed for Vrindavan. Upon receiving this message from his two messengers, Rupa Goswami immediately wrote a letter to Sanatana Goswami saying that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had departed for Vrindavan. In his letter to Sanatana Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami wrote, we two brothers are starting out to go see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You must also somehow or other get released and come meet us. Srila Prabhupada. The two brothers herein mentioned are Rupa Goswami and his younger brother Anupam Mallika. Rupa Goswami was informing Sanatana Goswami that he should join him and his younger brother. 219.34-35. Rupa Goswami further informed Srila Sanatana Goswami, I have left a deposit of 10,000 coins with the grocer. Use that money to get out of prison. Somehow or another, get yourself released and come to Vrindavan. After writing this, the two brothers, Rupa Goswami Anupam, went to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.